Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 103.
This week on the podcast, we'll tell you how one random guy's spreadsheet is saving America.
Plus, a classic Kerry diplomatic strategy prompts a meeting about a meeting with the Russians instead of an answer to a problem.
And though Chris Christie has now purchased some innocence, Jeb Bush is waiting in the wings to launch part 3 of the Bush family dynasty.
Hobby Lobby better hope their female employee's hobby isn't having sex.
And Northwestern football players score a touchdown in their case with the National Labor Relations Board.
Signs of the End Times Part 1 are coming.
And Kim Jong-un hopes his newest reforms will solve the age-old problem of not enough North Korean men looking like Chinese smugglers.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
And you should.
And you should.
That's
right.
We've
been Instagrammed a little today.
Oh my god,
we've been running into a lot of like former dictator-themed
sodas.
Which is a weird thing for, it's a little niche we found ourselves
in. Yeah, they had Lemonade, right, at the Reagan.
At the Reagan Library,
Library. And then we were down at Laguna today, and we were at some soda shop that had, like, what'd they have? They had,
They had Stalinade. They had something with Gaddafi.
Yeah, Gaddafi.
And then they had, like,
what it was.
Fidel or Castro soda or something.
It was something.
Something with Fidel, something with Mao.
Oh, yeah. Right. But anyway, they're on our Instagram. So you should look at that.
You should definitely
follow us there.
Look at that.
Yeah.
It's all that's on our Instagram currently, but it's worth the trip.
Yeah. But anyway, happy Monday. Happy March 31st. Happy last
happy
day.
Happy Obamacare day.
Open enrollment in Obamacare.
Yeah.
Unless you started already, and then you have a vague amount of days to finish it due to the extension that we have right now. But it's sort of like the last sort of like official day. It's like
it's the last day that you can think to yourself, you know what, I should sign up for that Obamacare thing and then actually be able to do it without getting a penalty.
Yeah, exactly.
So you should do it.
Yes.
You have today.
Yes.
After today,
you
can continue to complete your application until it's done.
Yeah, you're going to want to be one of the almost 7 million people who have signed up for this.
Yeah. Otherwise, what? Otherwise, why are you bothering?
I mean, come on, people.
But yeah, this number has been a really exciting roller coaster ride.
Big time.
Our obsession
with acasignups.net, mine has been very real.
Yeah.
I'm checking it on my phone and refreshing it like every 5 minutes. He doesn't even update that often, but like every tidbit that I can get is just sort of like a dream come true, basically.
Exactly. They had initially projected 7 million.
Right. Well, the CBO
like,
basically
a long time
said,
ago.
Right. And they sort of attached themselves to it. And a lot of people sort of like felt at the time that it was stupid of them to do it because basically the CBO gave that number out. And then Kathleen Sebelius sort of tied herself to it. And she was like, well, I think that we'll be able to say whether we were successful or not by whether we get to the 7 million. And then, of course,
the
website didn't work
to,
for a month and a half. And then they sort of revised it to 6 million and everybody was on their case about it. And then we got to 6 million earlier in the week.
We're almost at 7. Right. They're projecting 6.7 million, which considering that the website didn't function when the big release of the website happened, like, because that was the first sort of, supposed to be the first big bump. Like, it's one thing people sign up at the last minute, but also people sign up on
the
first day because they're excited.
Right.
So we missed that whole group of people. Turns out, though, that that group of people was not going to, you know, was not as many people as people thought.
Well, turns out, I think what we've learned here is that, you know, people want health insurance.
Exactly, yeah. The number of
people,
that we thought wanted health insurance did.
Right, exactly.
Charles Gabba. Is it Charles?
I think so. Sounds
Gabba. I can only think of, Brent had earlier misspelled his name as Gabba, G-A-B-B-A, and I could only think of Yo Gabba Gabba, a show I've never seen.
Me either.
But I don't know why I even was associating it with that.
Yeah.
But, so now I can't remember his first name. But I think it's Charles, and he has, his number has been, you know, his projections, which are kind of now what everyone's going by, have been steadily rising on his site all week.
Well, and
we're at 6.7 now, but anything could happen tomorrow.
Right. Well, and it's so crazy, too, because the day that he said, he even said he was, like, in his post, part of the reason, and I said this last week, that I love his posts are, like, you know, he's just some dude, basically.
Some guy.
With a spreadsheet and a, you know, lame-o website.
Yeah.
And he'll, like, post something. He'll be like, all right, I'm off to dinner with the family now. And, like,
it's kind of adorable.
I don't know. He posted something earlier in the week where he was like, oh, on the day that they announced that they reached 6 million, he was like, I'm sure I'm going to take some heat for this, but I'm just going to go ahead and do it. And he spelled gonna like G-O-N-N-A. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, he's not running, like, a real sort of, like,
Yeah, it's not a professional operation over there.
And
He was right.
They announced it later in the day. And he even said in his posting, he was like, if they announce it today, that probably means they reached it at some point yesterday for them to sort of like confirm the number. And that's exactly what happened. Like hours later, they had a conference call. Obama like called from Europe basically to have a conference call with reporters because they were so over the moon about it.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, we got to it yesterday.
Like,
he's a genius.
He's a genius.
Man's a genius. Anyway, so he's at 6.72 right now. But he also, I'm making my own assumptions right now, and I don't have a spreadsheet. I'm doing what the Republicans did during the 2012 election.
This is an element of truthiness.
On gut you know, feeling. Just my feelings and hunches.
Right.
But, like, you know, there's a lot of, this is the last weekend to sign up, and there are a lot of, like, grassroots events, and the White House posted on their blog, basically, and, like, and they're in a lot of places where they're, like, trying to get sign-ups.
Well,
like,
and have where been sort of, like, people slow, have been like, unable to really access information about what the law is
in a lot of these like, Texas specifically, like, there's some photos of, like, some grassroots events in Texas with people, like, lined up around the block,
like,
and these are places
like
that
voting
sort of, like,
in
like,
Florida style.
Right, like, you know, and they're in a, like, healthcare information desert there, basically.
Exactly.
It doesn't, they can't know what's going on because they're
It's not even their fault that they haven't signed up because what, they don't even know what they're signing up for. No one has told them anything about anything.
Yeah.
But these pictures are
they're crazy.
Exciting.
They're literally just, I mean, hundreds of people.
Lines in desolate parking lots that go around the parking lot.
And I understand that, like, a few events with a couple hundred people, like, down the block doesn't get you to, doesn't get the sort of, like, half a million that you need maybe yet to get to.
But when you see that kind of interest in smaller communities in a state like Texas, which is big enough that they should have had some outreach.
Right.
Like, this is not just, like, a random rinky-dink operation over there. Like, this is a real state, sort of.
Sort of.
So,
right, exactly.
I mean, it's like, when you see that kind of interest in it, you sort of realize that probably a lot of the opposition to this law, anyway, which we knew, I guess, but is just sort of misinformation about the law, but also that a lot of people would benefit from these kinds of outreach events because
they
want to know what's in the law.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they know they're hearing words like fine and penalty and tax and whatever. They want to know what they need to do.
Yeah.
You know? Like, no one's even telling them how to avoid the penalty, really.
Yeah.
So, there is a lot of last-minute interest in this law. I think, and I think Gabba said, like, this number could be higher. Like, this is his projection, but I wouldn't be surprised if it went over this. And then you were listening. What were you listening to?
Meet the Press this morning. Yeah.
Watching, I guess.
Yes. I was listening to it, too.
You were listening and watching.
Hosted by Chuck Todd this morning, which was...
Dumb hair.
Like, dumb hair. They have two guys with dumb hair.
It's like no one can have good hair on that
show.
And
I was like, okay, if David Gregory is gone, like, at least get Savannah Guthrie in there. Because she hosts for him sometimes, and she's way better.
Yeah.
She's better than he is.
Certainly
better than Chuck
Todd. And
I like Chuck Todd. I like Chuck Todd as my, like, guy who comes in for, like, 5 minutes and explains some numbers to me.
Yes,
like, that's what Chuck Todd is, like, good for, is sort of, like,
you don't want him to be there long enough that you have to look at his hair.
No.
You're not trying to do that.
No. Certainly not for an hour.
But he had an interesting guest on this week.
Yeah, it was really funny. He had on the mayor of Ithaca, New York, who's 26. He was elected when he was 24. His name is Svante L.
Murick? I think it's Murick.
Something?
But
who knows?
Svante is a great first name. Go for it.
Very handsome. I'm in the market to be dating Svante.
Right. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
You don't get elected at 24 to be the mayor of a place if you're not handsome.
No.
That's just not
But he's sort of like, in classic, like, sort of mayorness, when he was introduced on the panel, Chuck Todd asked him what, like, the biggest issue facing his city was, and he laughed, and he goes, potholes. but he brought up, because they were talking about healthcare, Rick Santorum was on, of course, like, railing on against it, like he would do. And he brought up a really good point, which Lila has been making forever, so I know that she would have loved watching him make this point, but, like, well, I'll let you do it, since it's your point.
Okay. So basically, he was, because he represents a community that has two major colleges, because Cornell and Ithaca College are both in Ithaca, and that's basically all that's in Ithaca. There's nothing else.
And so that's why he's elected.
That's
as
why
a
he's elected
old,
as a
because college people.
I remember at one
him.
Point, like, the mayor of New Paltz was like a 26-year-old Green Party person. And I was like, well, of course, because who's in New Paltz besides New Paltz?
Exactly.
Besides the university at New Paltz, you know, SUNY New Paltz. So in any case, he was talking about young people and their ability to access health insurance, and he was saying that, you know, especially as someone who's from a college town where he sees a lot of graduates, like, go out into the world and have to, like, worry about what they're going to do about healthcare, that a law that that sort of expands access to healthcare will benefit people immensely because it will allow them to go and do the sort of, like, riskier things, the more entrepreneurial things.
And innovative things.
And innovative things.
We talk in America all the time about, like, how we're not innovating any longer, and it's because people have
no
to,
one
like,
can afford to. Exactly. It's too scary. You can't be out there innovating when it costs you $1,000 a month to get health insurance.
Yeah.
And you're 22. Like, that's not a thing that you it's can be doing. So in any case, especially
from
a place.
You have to take jobs that you don't want.
You have to take jobs you don't want.
You
know,
corporate type situations.
Exactly. You have to sort of like play the game in a way that sort of stops you from having an idea and deciding to follow through with that idea when you're young and you can live on the cheap and all of these other things that being young is supposed to be. So he was talking about how this will be great for states like New York, but in, for communities like Ithaca, because young people will be able to take risks and they'll be able to innovate because they can take these risks because they'll have more affordable healthcare.
Yeah.
And you know, we should point out that in New York State, healthcare before the law was outrageously expensive. They already had a law that prevented them from discriminating against people with pre-existing conditions, but it meant that the insurance market there was made up entirely of sick people.
Yeah.
So it was like more than $400 at the cheapest to get healthcare a month there, which is crazy for like a healthy 22-year-old. You're not going to pay much. In any case, I've been saying this for years because this was what I thought should have been the big draw of the single payer bill that's sitting in the state legislature in New York.
Yeah.
Which is that Dick Gottfried has had this bill on the market since the 90s, basically. And it passed the assembly once, but it never passed the Senate.
Yeah.
But for the same reasons that Svante was talking about how Obamacare is going to be a huge benefit to young people in New York State, like a single payer plan would sort of do us one better, where it just like having young people have the freedom to go and do things, especially in a bad economy when traditional job growth is not really in the offing. Like we didn't graduate into an economy where like we could just go and be like, well, I'm going to be an investment banker and then I'm going to be rich and everything will be fine. Yeah. Like that's not the kind of economy people have graduated into. It's not, you know, and if you're in a creative field, like good luck trying to live in New York. But like my point has always been that upstate New York is like, not New York City. It is like a financial wasteland in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
It's got huge dead factories. It's got all sorts of all sorts of joblessness issues.
It's sort of like the, you know, the majority of the state that people don't think about. It's the same thing of as
half of the population
people,
lives there,
you know,
and there's not a lot of industry up there. There's not a lot of jobs up there. There are a lot of agricultural communities where the kids, you know, there's no money to be made in farming anymore, and the kids have nowhere to go and nothing to do. And so having access to healthcare changes everything. It makes a place like upstate New York viable as a place to open a factory or to open a business or and by extension that will benefit New York City because the sort of money and innovation is already in New York City.
It's there,
so that's where people are gravitate that's where people want to gravitate to. But like we have this whole other rest of the state over there that's like got nothing to do and it's got all these young people that have nowhere to go and they, you know, have to take these horrible jobs just to have a job so that they can not be going bankrupt at the age of 24. Like, so in any case, he's right on my right on my tail in terms of talking about the most important issues.
You're going to fight me to marry him, is what you're saying.
Yeah, obviously. Also, I'm going to call him and be like,
well, you should.
How can this be rolled into a single payer discussion?
Because so, Svante,
call me.
Hello.
Yeah. Email us. We're at braintrustapproved@gmail.com.
Yes.
We'd love to chat.
Yes.
But in any case, that's the exciting news on Obamacare.
Yeah.
There's still Ukraine news going on.
Oh, boy.
So we didn't get away scot-free.
No.
With this podcast.
We did eliminate one of the things that we've been talking a lot about. Well, we moved it to later.
We moved it to way late in the podcast.
The Malaysia plane. We'll get
not
to
a lot
later,
of news about that this
week. We've been
week,
leading a
but
lot
there's
recently
a lot of
with
talk
that, and
about
that's
it.
Not happening.
Yeah.
But we haven't quite been able to get rid of the Ukraine.
Well, it's like it just never stops.
No. Although there was less of it this week, so I feel like we're getting there.
We're slowly dwindling.
We're weaning ourselves off of it, basically. Because this week we did sort of like a very, you know, typically American thing where we had to have like basically like an emergency meeting where John Kerry like turned a plane around to like go back and like talk to Sergey Lavrov, who is the, you know,
very
Russian
dramatic
foreign minister.
Movie moment.
Yes. Where they decided to have a meeting where they both agreed that it was important that they continued to meet about this situation, but do nothing.
In classic U.S. diplomatic style.
Yes.
We agreed. We had a meeting to agree to meet in the future.
Correct.
So we're going to continue to meet with Lavrov. We all have agreed that it's important to resolve this issue. We haven't agreed on any of the ways that we're planning to do that. We haven't even agreed on when the date of our future meeting will be.
Right.
We're just agreeing that it's a good idea for us to talk again in the future.
And it's interesting because when I had, when I initially started, you know, doing the research for this week's podcast, I was, you know, doing it this morning and it was before this meeting had happened. And the tidbit that I had pulled was that we were, that Kerry and Lavrov,
it's Lavrov.
Isn't it? Oh, Lavrov. who knows, whatever.
It's like the worst name.
Yeah. said that they were going to be talking about the U.S. plan to de-escalate the situation in Ukraine, which includes the disarmament of irregular forces. I don't know. Regular forces? Sure, yeah, whatever.
The,
anyway.
Disarmament the ones of that the are, random right, forces, the forces that are bothering everybody. That are,
right, exactly. Yeah. International monitors to protect minority rights, direct dialogue between Russia and Ukraine, and Ukrainian political and constitutional reforms.
I imagine none of this got discussed.
It appears as what? Though not one of those things was on the table.
No. There what was discussed was the idea date, of meeting about a future arbitrary some of these issues
date. Right.
Later.
Now, there's still... Ukrainian for or there's still Russian forces on the Ukrainian border, which yeah. is what the whole issue is about.
No one so knows what to do about that.
By the time the second meeting happens, they may have already taken over the rest of Ukraine. Right. But we'll have at least have we'll have something on the books
we'll have
for
something
later.
On the books for later. That later meeting might be a meeting to discuss our strategy for discussing the issues at hand, which right. may have
which
to happen at a
future point
date.
Maybe that you know the USSR right. exists
exactly.
Now. The Soviet right. Union is now well, back in.
And this like on Friday, Putin and Obama had this phone call. Where, like, and Obama's been having a lot of these phone calls recently because right. there's one with the Pope.
He had a meeting
with the Pope where a similar thing happened.
And that was face-to-face,
too. Yeah,
so.
This...
was,
neither of them seemed to agree on what the conversation
nobody
was about.
Is, Obama's having a lot of one-sided conversations with
like,
people.
Brent and I were discussing how it's probably just that, like, he says his talking points and then Putin says his talking right. points and then they don't listen to each
Which
other.
Which at that point, like just release your talking
yeah,
points to the press,
to the world.
Basically. Because they had an hour, Putin called him on Friday and they had like an hour meeting and like the releases from the two camps, the White House and the Kremlin, were, so the White House said that it was a frank and direct call and Obama urged Putin to offer a written response to a diplomatic resolution to Ukraine crisis that the U.S. had presented.
Right.
And he also urged
the
Moscow,
resolution that they didn't end up actually talking right, about at the meeting
yes,
that they had later.
And he urged him to scale back the troop building on the border.
Yes.
Etc., all of those things. The Kremlin released their report, and it said that Putin had drawn Obama's attention to a rampage of extremists in Ukraine and suggested possible steps by the international community to help stabilize the
situation.
Now,
I imagine both of these are right. I imagine Obama said some frank and direct things about the Moscow's presence
yes.
in Ukraine, and I'm sure that Putin said
right.
something about a rampage of extremism.
Did either of them hear the other?
No.
No.
That's not what happened.
That's,
this was a conversation.
It was a disconnect.
They were concurrent conversations that were happening on either side of the phone line
correct.
That no one was responding
right.
to. It wasn't like Obama said these things and Putin was like, yes,
yes,
of
oh,
course,
right.
yeah, we should talk
we'll about,
that.
About
that.
Yeah. No.
But that's not what happened.
No.
He said that and Putin was like, there is a rampage of extremism in Ukraine.
Right. I don't know why they talked for an hour.
No. What did they talk about for that long?
No.
I mean, I imagine maybe there's like funny jokes they can tell, translation humor, stuff
sure.
like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe.
It's hard to know. Nobody, I don't know what Putin's English is like. I know
either.
That Obama doesn't speak Russian. I don't know how these calls, whether there are other staff members on these calls.
No.
You know, I assume there are.
Yeah, probably.
And at that point, like, with they're just sort of like talking themselves in circles.
Yeah.
I bet Obama can go on for an hour on the U.S. talking points on this issue.
Well, he's
I know
a rambler.
Putin can go on. For an
right.
hour about
yeah.
he can go on for an hour about anything.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised to hear that they talked for that long. I'm surprised that neither of them seemed to know what happened during the call. But that's apparently a thing that's happening with diplomacy. So that's why we're always having to agree to meet at later dates. Because
yeah.
we don't we're not listening at the meeting.
You
meetings.
And I should get into the diplomatic.
I know, we could have these conversations.
We can talk about our own thoughts for an hour. We do it every week.
Exactly. And
if we don't have to actually listen to the
right,
other person.
And we could just postpone discussion until
yeah.
a later date.
And
we can have a one-sided conversation and then postpone everything
else. And I work
else.
At a company that loves to have a meeting about a meeting.
Oh, that's true.
So
you do have that.
I am fully
You're fully aware of what it's like to be
and how that goes.
yeah. No, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You basically are operating on the same model as the U.S. diplomatic machine.
I can always have a part two of a meeting.
Yes,
or,
of course.
Or a mini,
Who can?
Or a mini-meeting.
A mini-meeting.
That will precede the larger mm-hmm. meeting.
You could have a post-meeting after... There's a lot of ways you can meet once you're having a meeting. There's
yeah.
a lot of other meetings you can tack on to the original
yeah.
meeting.
I should think about this.
Yeah. This future in diplomacy.
yeah.
Seems like you're already almost there. You already
yeah.
have all the skills.
Yeah, I do.
Necessary. In any case, we got an exciting non-bombshell in the Chris Christie, David Wildstein, school locker anger
good.
Case. Like, everything that's gone on already has been hilarious
right,
in this
no.
case. But you'll be now happy to know that Chris Christie investigated it.
Right.
Himself.
Oh, yes.
His own staff investigated it And he's in the clear.
A law firm that he hired
has
cleared him of any knowledge or wrongdoing in this whole situation.
Now, interestingly, they didn't talk to any of the parties that were involved.
No, literally.
So they based this on an unclear amount of information. Right.
None of the five people who have any of the information that would be pertinent to said investigation is, like, they didn't talk to his aide, Bridget Kelly, who was the one who was, like,
sending all the emails that started the whole thing.
They didn't talk to his former campaign manager, Bill Stepien. They didn't talk to David Wildstein, the Port Authority. They didn't talk to anybody from the Port Authority.
Because they didn't talk to David Sampson either, and he was the one that left, right?
Yeah. So I don't know what.
Who did they talk to? Who did they talk to?
It's a 300-page report. I don't know what's in it. Well, there's
people. You can write a lot in 300 pages.
I guess
there's some thoughts. You can have thoughts on anything for 300 pages. No one read the 300-page report, so it didn't matter what they put in it.
And it was funny because on Meet the Press this morning, Rudy Giuliani, who was like there basically in Chris Christie's stead. Chuck Todd was like, if you were, because Giuliani's a former U.S. attorney, and he was like, if you were presented with this investigation, would you be able to treat this as a complete investigation? And he had to say no.
No.
It's
like laughably incomplete.
Yeah.
Like, why bother? Don't have the investigation. Hope the issue goes away.
Yeah.
Don't talk about it
anymore. On some level, I get it.
I get the talking point that it grants him.
I get the talking point that it grants him, and I also get that, like, I have a feeling that he decided to do this investigation because he probably felt like he had to make it seem like he was doing something.
Right.
So on some level, I get that you have to, like, do an investigation, even if it's a sham investigation, and even if it's one that, like, you undergo, because you pay for it. Because I think as the governor, he had to be like, I'm going to investigate this.
Right.
Because that's what you have to do. So
this is the kind of thing I imagine happens a lot in places like Russia.
Probably.
You know, this is this kind of behavior where it's so blatantly obvious that it was a sham that I don't even know why people bother.
Yeah.
Like, he could have gone out of his way to make it not a sham and have it look independent.
Did this cost the state money
to do? Like, did the state pay for him to order everyone to investigate everyone but the people that were involved in the situation about random things? Like, I mean, like, who did they talk to that knew anything that gave them the idea that Chris Christie was somehow in the clear on this?
Right.
Like, obviously, their entire intention in writing this report was to clear him.
Right.
He should have made it seem like he was a little bit guilty if he wanted it to seem legit.
I know, exactly.
He should have found a sort of non-controversial way of being guilty.
Right, exactly. But, you know, sadly for him, anyway, the New Jersey lawmakers and the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Jersey are running parallel investigations.
Right, they're still investigating independently.
So they will probably, you know, interview people who might have some of the information that's necessary to, you would think, anyway.
But you'll be happy. Chris Christie's conscience is clear. That's what counts.
That's what's important.
He needed that to get out of the way, that hurdle to be cleared. Because he's in new trouble now. The man, by the way, can't do anything right.
No,
he's like running for president, obviously, but like in the worst possible way that a person could be running for president.
Yeah.
Because now he's pissed off Sheldon Adelson. Don't be that guy. You're a Republican running for president.
Man.
That's who you go to for money.
God.
There's like Newt Gingrich ran an entire campaign with no support from just Sheldon Adelson's pocketbook.
And came very close to winning that
race,
by the way.
Close to winning the election.
He was the last man standing.
He was the last man standing after Santorum and Obama sort of went at it. But the only reason he was supporting Newt Gingrich was because he wanted to move the freaking embassy, the U.S. embassy in Israel from Jerusalem, from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Like, he's an easy man to buy off.
Yes,
so it's not hard to not piss him off.
Yeah.
But Chris Christie managed so first of all, he was speaking to the Republican Jewish Coalition, which is a group I would argue shouldn't exist. But beyond that, stepping back from that issue, but it's like one of those organizations that is sort of like an amalgam of crazies of various sorts.
Yeah.
So Chris Christie is speaking to them, and he wasn't the only one that was there. There's a lot of people running for president that were there. I think John Kasich was there. Scott Walker was there.
Yeah.
They're all delivering speeches to try to court the Republican Jewish vote. Chris Christie decides to go on about a trip that he took to Israel with his family in 2012.
Yeah.
But like an idiot, or like a person who doesn't know, because he couldn't possibly know, because who knows about these things?
That's that. No, go ahead.
Oh, he's talking about this helicopter ride that he took over the occupied territories to talk about how he understands the military risks that Israel face. Now, for those of you that are not crazy, you may not realize that that's a controversial way to describe the Palestinian territories that Israel occupies.
Yes.
I'm okay with that. That's what I call the occupied territories. But if you're a member of the Republican Jewish Coalition, or God forbid, the Zionist Organization of America, That is not what you call it.
Yeah.
As the president, Morton Klein, of the Zionist Organization of America, told Chris Christie before he went in to apologize to Sheldon Adelson for saying this, at a minimum, you should call it a disputed territory. That's the minimum.
Right.
But my favorite thing is that Klein then later is talking, I think, to Politico, whoever, and said that Christie was noncommittal. He either doesn't understand the issue at all, or he's hostile to Israel. Just for accidentally using the term occupied territory in a speech that was intended to let them know that he understands the, you know, struggle that Israel faces.
That trip that he was on to Israel, I remember when he did that in 2012, and there was one of the best headlines ever in the history of the world, because he went to the Wailing Wall, and it was like a picture of him, and it was the whale at the wall. Do you remember?
Yes!
That was that trip that he went on. That's like one of the best.
Was that the Post? I think that was the Post.
It might have been.
It was one of the genius headline writers at one of the New York Rags, I think, that wrote it. It was that, yes.
Top-notch. Journalism.
Quality.
Reporting.
Quality journalism. So in any case, Chris Christie already pissed off the money people.
Man. Yeah.
You know? I mean...
Right.
Sheldon Adelson, by the way, needs to be...
come on.
Shipped away.
Put down.
Put down. Yeah. Something.
Yeah.
He's the worst.
He's terrible. He's too old to be doing this.
He's too old to be doing this.
He's so old.
He has too much money. I don't understand how he has so much money, and I don't like it.
I don't either.
You know? No. And he's just... I don't need somebody organizing this event in the first place and asking John Kasich and Scott Walker and Chris Christie to come speak to a bunch of the nuttiest, like, Israel obsessives out there.
Yeah.
Because the Zionist Organization of America is, like, up to some real nutbaggery.
Oh, I'm sure.
They're not nice people.
No, I'm sure.
So in any case, but that's what you do when you're running for president in 2016.
Right.
And obviously Chris Christie was the front runner until all of this nonsense broke.
Yeah.
You know, broke into the scene. So
now there's some behind the scenes shenanigans going on with some high profile Republicans who are doing the whole draft Jeb Bush situation right now.
Like, don't draft Jeb Bush. Don't
do that.
That's the
plan?
Like, that's desperate.
That's big time desperate.
That is
the man's
real
been out
desperate.
Of office for 7 years. He's the brother and son of presidents that we don't like.
Yeah.
like, and I don't mean me, you, and I. I mean, like,
the
America
world.
Collectively.
Yeah, America. Like, every. Like, I can't imagine. How desperate is it that they just spent the last 8 years trying desperately to step away from the Bush legacy?
I know. Like, literally, wouldn't even let the president, like, show up at campaign events with them.
I mean, Romney's campaign was an exercise in avoiding George Bush. McCain's campaign, same thing. They were desperate to keep him out of the limelight. No one talks about George Bush anymore, you notice. He was, like, the dominant presence in our lives for 8 years.
Right.
It was all we freaking talked about for 8 years. No one mentions him anymore. It's like he disappeared.
I always did feel a little bad for Jeb.
Well, he was the one who was supposed to be president.
It's not going to cause me to vote for him, obviously. But he was the one who was supposed to be president. He's very obviously the smarter of the two.
Yeah.
Like,
he's the one more like his father.
And he's, you know, being punished by the shitty job that his brother did, which is, like, I mean, not his fault. And he probably won't get to be president because of it. I'm all for that reason. I'm all for them drafting him.
Yeah, do
draft
it.
Away.
Go
I mean,
for it. Let's talk about the Bush legacy. Let's do it. I want to talk about nothing but.
Yeah.
But in any case, Jeb was now, he's claiming that he's not running, but now he's starting to do the whole thing where you travel around giving policy speeches.
He's doing the non-running running.
That's what you do when you're about to run for president. You don't do that just because you love giving speeches so much.
Yeah, exactly.
It's stressful to give speeches.
Well, and he met with Sheldon Adelson recently, too.
Right. Yes. Oh, yeah. So he's seeking funding also.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Who is Sheldon Adelson going to go with but in this field?
Right.
Because
whoever wants to move the embassy...
Like,
probably whoever wants to most bomb Iran.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's probably a big one. Like, there's not, like, an obvious Newt Gingrich, though, in this field.
There's not. No.
And I feel like...
Unless there's going to be a Newt Gingrich in this field.
Oh, my God. Please, can there be a Newt Gingrich in this field?
Yeah.
That would make everything complete.
That's it.
Because I would love to see Sheldon Adelson throw away all his money on Newt again.
That'd be
fantastic. I would
fantastic.
Love to see all of these other wackadoos going at it at various, you know... debates of sorts, campaign events, whatever it takes.
Right. But a lot of these, you know, they talked to this, whoever did the reporting on the story, basically, it was in the Washington Post, actually, and they talked to a lot of high-profile Republican bundlers, ones who, like, bundled for Romney, who basically said the vast majority of Romney's top 100 money people would
Go with Jeb Bush.
Would
he's the same
Bush.
Guy. He's another Romney. Right. It's the same carbon copy. And if they're fools if they go with that model again, because obviously Romney was the guy who had all of the qualifications that they required to be president, and they messed it up. Right. They're getting alarmed because, like, some crazies are getting into the fray. Like, they're not trying to vote for Rand Paul.
Right.
They're not trying to fundraise for Rand Paul. They're not trying to fundraise for Ted Cruz. They know what that spells for their party, which is certain demise.
Sheldon Adelson certainly doesn't want any part of Rand Paul.
No.
Rand Paul
he's an isolationist. He's not trying to get involved in that. But Jeb Bush is certain to make all of the exact same missteps that the Romney campaign made. He's out of touch with people.
Right. And he's also a Bush. He's boring. I mean, he's going to have the same...
As vanilla as they come. Yeah. He's like a boring, stodgy white man who probably also can't comfortably sit on a stool
in a
debate context.
Yep.
And listen, I don't love Hillary Clinton, but if she ends up being the candidate, she can sit on a stool. She's not a person who can't comfortably sit. You know? Like, Like, they're stodgy, and then they're stodgy.
Yeah, exactly.
And Jeb Bush is of the WASP stodges that we can't even... Like, there is a reason that someone like Romney didn't connect with everyone.
Right. I think there is something about this that excites me greatly. Because...
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me. Part of the reason... And another reason that they claim that they are sort of trying to draft him is because that they think that he has the, quote, gravitas to run against Hillary Clinton.
Yes. Now, everyone's obsessed, by the way, with who can run against Hillary Clinton. Right. That's all anyone's thinking
about. And I am obsessed with the thought of what could happen for a third party candidate if it's a it's Clinton versus Bush.
Oh, my God.
Because I don't think that America would stand for it. I really don't. I think both members of their respective parties would probably nominate them. But that's a small percentage of the actual sort of, like, voting population who, like, help pick candidates for the parties. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, you know, it's not independents don't do that. It's not, you know, the general public doesn't get involved in sort of primary fights. Like, nobody starts paying attention until 2 weeks before they have to actually vote in something. So I just... Something about it... If Hillary Clinton is going to be the nominee, I still don't necessarily think she is.
I don't think she is, but...
If she is... I would love for him to be the Republican nominee. Because I think that there is just something that, like, reeks of just disgustingness about that that would be, like, make it ripe
for... Another Clinton-Bush sort of comparison year. Like, it's like we can't get rid of either of these families.
I know.
Families.
Since, like, what?
Like, dynasties.
Yes.
Like, full-on dynasties.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that that's ultimately, like, I hope that they draft him because... America's saving grace in this situation is that I don't think Americans are trying to have an actual real-life dynasty on their hands.
No, they're not.
This is a dynasty. That's a dynasty.
Yeah.
That's not a democracy.
Yeah.
You know? There's no family that deserves to be the get the presidency three times.
No.
There's not a family in history that's done that.
Yeah.
Even the families that have repeated haven't done that.
Yeah.
The Adamses didn't go a third round.
No, they didn't.
Like... I mean,
John Quincy couldn't produce a president.
No, exactly. Like, you just don't get to do that.
No.
So, this is some exciting times.
Yeah.
Especially because currently, Rand Paul and Mike Huckabee are leading in the polls.
Yeah, I'm sort of excited just that Mike Huckabee is back up there.
Oh my
because
God.
Now I feel like my prediction is sort of like coming back. I was, after he sort of had his, what was it, Uncle Sugar
his
moment,
Uncle Sugar.
I was like, oh God, he's out of it. And I declared that he was going to be the nominee.
His supporters probably thought that was genius.
He's back in it.
Yeah, he's
back in the game, Mike Huckabee.
The man can't say anything crazy enough to get himself knocked out. That's not.
These 13% who are Huckabee supporters are lifelong Huckabee supporters.
They're not trying to.
Till death do them part. I mean,
trying to be betrayed by some nonsense like an Uncle Sugar comment.
No.
They were right there with him. They knew what he was trying to say. And it was horrible and sexist and racist and everything.
Right.
And right. Yeah. They
Most
they still care.
Right.
Yeah. So and the Rand Paul thing is that's already this like sort of this part of the Republican Party that no one else can
that
really
excites,
touch.
That excites me the most,
yeah.
I think. Just because I'm fascinated by that candidacy.
I'm fascinated by that candidacy. I'm fascinated by the idea that there is this huge group of isolationists within the Republican Party for a party that's defined itself on the basis of like military prowess, basically.
Yeah.
Like they don't have another legacy to really fall back on at this point. All they've been standing for on the domestic scene is cutting stuff and sort of being in the way. And they like to sort of portray this idea that they'll go in and be tough on anyone. And like to have this many people within the Republican Party have seen what happened with the Bush presidency probably and been
like,
okay,
screw that.
Hold on. Is that what us greedy, selfish people really stand for? We want to spend all of our tax dollars on this nonsense?
Yeah.
No.
No.
So, This is an exciting scene.
Right.
Jeb Bush is in there with 11%.
So he's right there. Christie down to 9.
Christie down to 9. Christie's going to be down to 0
tied
soon.
Tied with Ted Cruz. Like, that's
like,
when you
don't
know.
Be tied to Ted Cruz. That's a disaster. And they also asked people who they thought had the best chance of beating Hillary Clinton, because that's what everyone's obsessed with.
That's what they're obsessed with.
And that was, people responded with Paul, Christie, and Bush.
Yeah.
Christie does not have a snowball chance in hell of beating Hillary Clinton. So nice try.
He can't run against a woman.
I would love to see Jeb Bush run against Hillary Clinton, as we've just said.
Yeah.
And like, oh my God, can you imagine Rand Paul, Hillary Clinton?
No.
That is some wackadoo-ness, because that is a race that
where Hillary Clinton has the Republican
version
of foreign policy, and Rand
Paul has
the
who do you vote for in that situation?
Well,
you vote for Hillary Clinton in that situation.
Well,
unless you have a third, that's another third party opening,
and
that's a confusing
honestly,
race.
Depending, I don't know. I'm gonna stop talking before I say something that I'm going to regret later.
Right. It is hard to remember that Rand is not Ron.
Yes, it is. He's not.
He's a little crazier, by a little I mean a lot.
He's a little more attached to the Tea Party than his father.
He's
was.
A Tea Partier. Yeah. But that would be a fascinating race. It would be terrible for America, and I hope it doesn't happen. But it would be fascinating to watch.
Agreed.
Also, this poll was done by a company that I think might be fake anyway, because they kept referring the CEO of the company, and it was called what is it called? It's called the WP Opinion Research. It was a poll of 108 people done by phone, or 801 people done by phone. That's like I'm dyslexic today.
Yeah.
But the CEO referred to this as a field of quality candidates,
false,
as if to explain why no one has broken from the pack. And I was like, it's years out, and it's a field of horrible candidates.
Yeah,
that's why no one's broken from the
people.
They're all equally terrible.
Yeah.
In any case.
Oh, God.
A chain of stores I've never heard of has entered the national scene.
They're in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Hobby Lobby. It's a place where stay-at-home moms go to buy things to put scrapbook with.
Yes.
Basically.
Okay. Yes.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it's
and
a scrapbook.
So, it's like a
store.
It's like a Michaels.
Yeah.
It's like a lower-rent Michaels, basically. Hobby Lobby.
Yeah. It's owned by Mennonites, as it turns out.
Sure.
And you don't normally hear about Mennonites getting into the political fray this way, because they're sort of like a branch of the Amish, basically. They're like sort of a less crazy branch of the Amish. And so they normally sort of stay out of the scene.
Yeah.
Like, they're up to their own business and no one bothers them.
Yeah.
Except right now, when suddenly national attention is about to be turned on Mennonites in a very negative way.
Right. Well, and it's also by this Conestoga Wood Specialties Corporation. They're like in with the Hobby Lobby.
They're owned, I think Hobby Lobby...
Hobby Lobby, I think, is a crazy Christian.
Oh, that's
not
okay.
The Mennonites,
so,
and I think it's this
Conestoga Wood Specialties is in the case with them, and
but
that's
still,
owned by Mennonites.
It's still interesting
it's
that
Christians
Mennonites
and
are
Mennonites
sort of, like,
being involved. Yes,
right, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, in the Affordable Care Act, there's the exemption that the president sort of like we reported on it.
Right.
All the drama with sort of like the Catholic universities and the Catholic Church not wanting
to pay for contraception.
So they have this exemption in the ACA to basically exempt religious organizations and sort of like nonprofits and so like Catholic hospitals and from covering contraception for their employees. So Hobby Lobby wants to get in with them, but they are a private corporation, but they're Christians, and they also don't want to be offering this contraception.
Right.
So the Supreme Court heard Sebelius versus Hobby Lobby this week, and it sounds like it could go either way.
I am so pissed about this.
It's bad.
This is why they shouldn't have allowed the exemption for churches. This is the exact reason why. Because it is a very slippery slope.
It's a huge slippery slope. Not just for contraception, but for anything. And some of the female justices brought this up. They were the ones who were sort of like arguing.
Wait, what if you need vaccines and you don't approve? What if your employer doesn't believe in blood transfusions? What if your employer doesn't? I mean, there's a number of.
Well, I said if you're crazy Christians, do not offer HIV medicine.
Exactly.
If you feel like that's like a scourge on the gays. It's sort of like
at a certain point, can you decide you don't want to? Like, can you sort of piecemeal decide only on what medical procedures you sort of like approve of yourself? Based on non-information about nothing.
Well, and if you're just the type of employer who just doesn't want to give healthcare to your employees, then do you also
I don't want to give anything. I don't believe in healthcare.
I'm
a
Scientologist,
Christian scientist.
And I only believe... Yeah, exactly. Right.
Can Christian scientist organizations just not give any healthcare?
Right. I only want my employees to pray for their healthcare.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they're up to.
No, exactly. That's why you don't allow religious organizations. But where this gets even slipperier is that... Once you have an organization that's been exempted, regardless of whether they're a nonprofit or not, You have given private corporations the ability, you've given them the argument to argue that they also should be exempted, because they already can say that there's this precedent that some organizations that are religiously affiliated, as they are, because they are owned by religious people, somehow have a special, you know, have the ability to not provide healthcare, adequate healthcare for their employees. That, like, once you have exempted someone, you've exempted everyone. That's why you don't exempt anyone.
Right.
You tell the Catholic Church to go fuck themselves, because the Catholic Church is up to a lot of no good all over the country that we could be, we could have, like, the way they could have played that, I feel like, is to have been like, listen, that's nice to hear from you. When you can talk to us about how you're getting rid of pederasts in your freaking priest pool and all of these other social issues that you have.
Yeah.
Then you can talk to us about contraception. Until that point, though, until you have the moral authority to discuss healthcare with us, as a church, you know, like, actively sort of, actively, like, ignored the AIDS crisis, like, as a church that has all sorts, that has been protecting pederasts, as a church that's been doing all of these evil things, then, you know, as when you have the moral authority to talk to us about everyone else's healthcare, non-Catholics' healthcare, then we can talk about this.
I agree.
But until that point, go fuck yourself. You're just a random organization of people. You can choose not to use the contraception if you don't want it.
I agree.
Tell your employees that you don't approve of them having contraception if that's what you want to do. You can't stop them from getting it.
And it's not even just about healthcare with this law, too, because, like, you know, what happens if, you know, a Christian organization, you know, doesn't think that, you know, a you know, let's just say, for example, like, a gay family shouldn't get their the family leave that they're required to by law. I mean, it's just, it sort of is a, you know, it's similar talking points to what was going on in Arizona, actually, really.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's almost just, exactly the same.
It's
you, there's sort of no way to regulate where the line is.
Right, exactly.
Once you can discriminate, then you can just discriminate against anyone because the precedent is there. The precedent, we allowed the precedent to be there for this case, but they have to draw the line here.
Well, and this is, I think, the other thing that Sotomayor brought up, and I was like, yes, because, like, it not only is there this whole argument about, like, you know, what their religious beliefs are or whatever, but what it boils down to is Hobby Lobby is a corporation.
Right. So they exist only to make money.
So, and and I know that we have sort of previously decided in the courts that corporations are people
too.
But I think that, you know, all basically 100% of Americans would think that that is not actually the case. And she said, she was quoted as saying, how does a corporation exercise religion?
Yeah.
Like, Hobby Lobby is not a religious organization. It's a fucking craft store.
Yeah. How does an organization that's specific purpose from a legal perspective is to make money.
Yes.
Exercise religion.
Right. The Hobby Lobby doesn't go to church on Sunday.
No, exactly. Because Hobby Lobby isn't a person. It's an entity.
Yes.
It's a corporate entity
whose
only purpose at the Hobby Lobby entity is just a thing that makes money.
And I would assume that all of the Hobby Lobby shareholders do not share this opinion.
No.
They can't. They couldn't possibly.
Possibly. Because Hobby Lobby is a major corporation owned by a lot of different people.
Yes.
Who are just random people.
Yep.
Just doing their thing.
Oof.
But it's... This is infuriating to me. This, I, you know, I lay a lot of blame with the Catholic Church for this because they were the major organization that made these kinds of questions possible.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, there's a lot of sort of wackadoo evangelical Christian organizations that kind of support this sort of thing. But the Catholic Church is sort of like where the ball stopped because they were the only organization with the political power to sort of challenge the Obama administration on this.
Right.
Interestingly, Obama met with the Pope this week as well. Talked about nothing with him, too.
Oh, yeah. This was the other conversation where Obama had that was very one-sided because nobody seemed to know what they'd talked about after they had
had completely different ideas of what they had talked about.
Right.
It's promising in that because of this healthcare law controversy and a few other things, the Obama administration and the Catholic Church have not been so buddy-buddy.
They have not.
For a long time now. And this new pope, I mean, you know, this new pope has been sort of a breath of fresh air in, you know, every part of the Catholic world, universe, whatever. And so I think they're sort of hoping that they can have a new start and maybe collaborate on some things that they can agree on, like income inequality. I mean, this pope has been really great on talking about issues of income inequality.
Yes.
I think that he's somebody who sort of lends moral weight to the discussion in a way that a lot of, you know, that American politicians sort of like appreciate, you know, liberal American politicians or progressive American politicians.
Marxists.
Marxists, yes. So they're, you know, and they also have a lot of common ground on immigration issues. They want to get rid of human trafficking. I mean, there's like some broad things that we can all agree are terrible that we could stop doing.
Yeah.
They sort of steered ominously clear of any of the big controversies that they've been embroiled in, though.
Yeah.
Specific, you know, healthcare specifically, but really any of the other things that the Catholic Church and the U.S. have not agreed on, they didn't discuss.
Right. I love that the Pope, they gave each other gifts.
I know.
And the president gave him a box of
seeds.
Carrot seeds?
Like, which, I don't know what that's about.
And the Pope gave the president two medallions, one symbolizing the need for peace and solidarity between the two hemispheres, and he also gave him a copy of his book, which I love.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite part of the whole story.
Could Obama have given him a copy of Dreams of My Father?
I know.
Here's my... Yes, thank you for your memoir. Here's mine.
I know. So good. But yeah, anyway, so that happened. It's the first time they'd met.
Yeah, it's the first time they'd met.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's sort of a promising step in what has been sort of a promising popedom. Because
So far.
I mean, he has room to be evil because he's still a Catholic. But at least we're not operating under a pope that was a Nazi at one time. Like, I mean,
right, exactly.
You know, this has been a promising era. He's been sort of talking about a lot of the things that a pope should talk about.
Yeah.
Like how poor people have it rough. That sort of thing.
That's supposedly a thing that the Catholics care about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They don't care about poor women having it rough, evidently, as we've proven, but they care about poor people in the general vague sense having it rough. Yeah. And that's something that I think him and Obama could work together on, because the pope saying something does give it a certain amount of sort of like gravitas, as we were talking about. Not Jeb Bush saying things.
No.
The pope, though.
The pope has more gravitas than Jeb Bush.
Definitely.
Big time.
Big time. Yeah. In any case, Obama also was talking about NSA reform this week.
Mm-hmm.
He had, you know, he made one of his speeches where he told Congress to pass his proposal, which would...
Swiftly. They're not going to do anything.
Or at all. But he said, you know, his proposal is that they end the sort of bulk collection within the NSA of metadata and allow the phone companies to keep the data so that the Justice Department has to approve it every time that they want to investigate something.
Right, they have to go through the course to like try and actually pull something.
Which is better than what is happening now.
Right.
Unfortunately, he also extended the current program this week.
Right.
So
he has to sort of like...
It's like, who knows what's happening.
He could basically like stop extending the program and it would just be over.
Yeah.
Like that's...
But this is the thing, is they don't want the program to end. They want to keep collecting the metadata.
Yeah.
They just want it to be more palatable to the American people how they're storing the metadata.
Right.
So he's not going to end the program. He's going to wait for Congress to do nothing and then they're going to feel great about how they tried, but no one could do anything and it's too bad and we're just going to have to keep spying on everyone.
Yeah. Exactly.
We have nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Yeah. Come on, everybody.
Yeah. This is a story that is very exciting because it has a thing that I love. Well, two things that I love greatly and one thing that you love greatly.
Yeah. But this college is rare because it's about college football. So
And unions. Because
oh my God. I love when we can talk about sports unions.
There was a huge decision this week with the Chicago District of the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, on Wednesday sided with Northwestern football players that they qualify as employees of the university and can unionize.
Isn't that exciting?
This was... they had they cited that the players' time commitment and to their sport and the fact that their scholarships were directly tied to their performance on the field as reasons for granting them union rights. And it was a case that was brought by the CAPA, the Collegiate Athletic Players Association, and the former Northwestern quarterback Kane Coulter, who I think is in the draft this year. Like he's like a fairly decent quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, Northwestern football is like, you know, decent, not great, but like it's a thing.
Sure, I don't know any of this.
Sure, and the United Steelworkers Union.
Yes, well,
they were putting the bill. For this.
I imagine that the steelworkers, like a lot of other big unions, of industries past, sort of, or not industries that have shrunken, have gotten into other fields. Because I know that a lot of adjunct professors at private universities are organized by the United Auto Workers. My dad is a member of the United Auto Workers. He's not an auto worker.
No,
he's never built a car in his life.
Right.
But so I think the United Steelworkers probably wants to be the union that unionizes these college players.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, it has been interesting because it does seem like these sort of like strong arm unions of, you know, of sort of traditionally strong unionized industries actually do a really good job or a better job of organizing a lot of these collegiate related people than the teachers unions do.
Because
teachers unions are focused on different kinds
They're,
you know, when you're bread and butter is elementary school teachers, you're not caring so much about what's going on in the college, you know, college level. That's a very different world. But it seems like you know, they've been looking for ways to stay relevant, I think. Yeah. And this is an area that they've realized is sort of ripe for unionization.
Yeah.
And so this is exciting.
Right.
Because the steelworkers is a real union. It's not some bullshit union.
No, I know. But no one other than the people who brought the case liked this.
Oh, of course not.
Northwestern was super pissed, and they're appealing to the full National Labor Relations Board in Washington, D.C. The Big Ten conference, which is what Northwestern belongs to, was super pissed. So were all of the other conferences, like the Southeastern Conference, were like issuing their own statements. The NCAA legal chief officer was like not happy about this at all, because, you know, it really can lead. It has a lot of interesting things that it could lead to, which we don't really necessarily associate with college athletics.
No, and I mean, I think that it sort of has some interesting. If nothing else, it raises an interesting point that probably needed to be raised in a much sort of like more public way about how much money schools make off of these sports versus how much money these students get. Like, is the cost of their education really sort of like equivalent to the money they bring into the school? It's not at all. And essentially, once you're playing for a school only because of your football talent, and your education is sort of an afterthought.
Yeah.
Like, and because that's what a lot of the situation is here. I mean, these college athletes are not getting the same education as really motivated students at the universities.
No.
And so once that's the case.
And also, like, at least in terms of a lot of sports, and I don't know what it is for football, but at least in terms of basketball, the NBA now says that you have to go to college for a year.
Right.
So you're seeing a lot of college basketball athletes anyway, who they're calling one and dones, who literally are only going to school for a year because they're good enough to play in the NCAA, but they just have to go to college.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's sort of that aspect of this whole thing too, where like, if you're forcing someone to go to college, then like, should they be able to sort of like maybe get paid if they're there when they could be in the NBA making $50 million a year?
It's hard to sort of like, because it feels like athletes get paid too much money. It's hard to sort of think about student athletes as being exploited, because they're sort of prepping themselves for careers in a sort of field that where they're going to get too much money at the end of the day.
Right.
However, these are not only things that bring in a lot of money to the school, but there are a lot, you know, sports are dangerous. So there's a lot of issues with sort of like, you know, I know in football they have all sorts of head injury issues that they're always having. Like, there's a lot of issues in terms of labor protections.
Yes.
That this brings up interesting questions
about. Right, exactly. And that's what CAPA, the College Athletic Players Association, was saying. Like, they're two of their main points that they wanted to be able to bargain for, like, as a union, were to make sure that all the players got proper access to healthcare for any sports-related medical injuries, and also better procedures to reduce head injuries, specifically in football, because there's been a lot of sort of, like, you know, research done recently of sort of the lasting effects of being a football player, basically.
Right.
And there was actually just a huge class action lawsuit with the NFL where a lot of former players won because they have like these really sort of like terrible brain injuries from when they were playing in the NFL. And it's really actually sort of sad.
Yeah.
And now they sort of they've implemented a lot of things in the NFL where, like, you know, if you get hit hard, you have to go out and you have to go to the locker room and you have to be tested. And if you do have a concussion, even if it's mild, you can't play in the next week's game and you sort of like have to sit out practices. And so they're sort of trying, but a lot of those same things actually haven't been done in college yet, just because the NCAA sort of hasn't really, it doesn't trickle down in the same way. And there's no sort of like financial, you know, there's no financial incentive for them to do it. So the only way for these players to do it is to unionize and be able to like ensure that they're able to get these things.
No, this is this is sort of an exciting idea. And I mean, you know, I think those of us who don't really follow college sports often feel like that's a very like mysterious world that is not necessarily like what I want to be going on in higher education, because like higher education should be about getting a higher education and I realize that these things bring money into the school, and I realize that that's important, but there is this sort of like exploitive angle to having people come to your school just because they're going to play. You know, in the small schools, in schools that don't really have like high level athletics, you can have people who are sort of semi recruited for sports, but generally they have to be good enough students to get in. They have to meet a lot of criteria that college athletes at these big schools do not.
Well, and it was interesting too, because I was reading something about this earlier in the week too. The NCAA actually sort of like coined the term student athlete. That's what they call everyone, as a just sort of like nudge reminder that these people like are students first.
Right, but they're not.
But they're not, and that's the thing.
Well, and I feel like part of what something like this allows for is for the sort of College Athletics Association to create an environment in which they can actually get an education while they play these sports.
Or force them to get that education. I just saw something recently on Huffington Post where they linked to a paper that like some North Carolina basketball player had written about Rosa Parks that would have been like a C for a third grader, basically, that they got an A in.
Professionally for the rest of your life.
It's
a very short-lived career. It's important that athletes get educations. Because what are they going to do when they fucking retire with a head injury and they have nowhere to go and nothing to do and they've never written an essay past a third grade level?
Yeah.
I mean, that's problematic. That's why they get paid millions of dollars when they do play, because there's no future in their career.
Yeah.
I feel like they sort of like just open. And also, a lot of college athletes get injured and then never get to play professionally and don't have an education at the end of the day.
Well, something like, I think, you know, we're talking about basketball and we're talking about football here, but like, you know, something like 90% of, you know, student athletes, I'm using air quotes here, student athletes, don't play in any sort of professional sporting league.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? It's just sort of like you don't go on to play professional lacrosse. Like, most of the people who are sort of like playing college tennis don't go to the ATP tour. I mean, like, there's most, you know, the large majority of people who are college athletes aren't going on to make millions of money. Millions of dollars worth of money,
and they should be protected from from having to practice so much that they can't get an education, or having things put in the way of them also getting an education,
Being healthy for the rest of their life to where they can work.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway,
That was exciting.
It was.
I love unions. Brent loves sports and union. It's like everyone wins in that story.
Yeah. Totally. No one wins in this story.
Oh my god.
Unfortunately,
the worst.
Oh my god, there is a crazy mudslide in Washington. Like, crazy.
Like a crazy, like crazy fans.
Epic. Like, biblical style. Noah style.
Noah style mudslide. This community called Oso, it's 55 miles outside of Seattle, had this mudslide last Saturday where, like, a square mile got covered by mud that's, like, in some places it's, like, 30 or 40 feet deep.
Crazy.
And the surface is like quicksandy, so like you can't walk on it. It's too dangerous. They can't bring heavy machinery in.
No, so they can't find people.
They can't find anyone.
Right, and there's like over 100 people missing. I think they've confirmed something like 20 people.
There's 26 dead, 90 confirmed missing, and 35 who they're not sure were in the area or not, but they haven't found yet.
Yeah.
There's 5 people that are injured that are in the hospital that were critically injured.
Right, but they can't retrieve the bodies.
Right. No one's getting bodies. They can find some of the people, but they can't get to them because you can't bring heavy machinery into quicksand.
Yeah.
And there's all these other things, you know, when you have a mudslide, things like septic tanks end up in the mudslide.
Right, exactly.
It's too dangerous to really go and do a thorough search, especially because it's like, once you have 40 feet of mud, like, that's a lot of mud. 40 feet. Think about how high 40 feet is, everybody.
Yes.
Your ceilings are probably 8 to 9 feet.
10 feet. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of, that's like a that's 4-story building.
Yeah.
Is on top of some of the, you know, like, that's too much to be digging around in. That's too much mud. But the survivors haven't really even been let back into their homes.
No,
so
they're
just sort of getting impatient because, like, they want to sort of figure out what to do now and they can't.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Oof.
And here, we're having like a million earthquakes. So all paranoid that the big one's coming.
I know. Well, last week we talked. We did the podcast on Monday last week, which is the day that we had that one
that
we all felt.
Oh my god.
It was like a 5.1. But that was...
No, that was a 4.1, but it was just right here.
That's right. The epicenter was closer.
The epicenter was
This
really
one
close.
Was a 5.1.
Yeah, but
and
it was...
There was actually some damage.
Yeah.
And like 100 people in the area where it was, which is like La Habra, Brea, and Fullerton, which I think is like south of here, like 20 or 30 miles south of here.
Yeah, sort of like inland though, I think, right?
I think so, yeah. That's a...
We don't know.
You'll learn this about people who live just in the city of Los Angeles. I have lived here 11 years. La Habra is only, I think, 20 miles away from where
I'm currently
sitting in my house right now. I had no fucking clue where it is.
No.
Could be Fullerton?
Anywhere.
Could be any of these places. Could be anywhere.
Yeah.
They're apparently close.
Right.
And
we don't know how close.
And I mean, I felt the one that was closer last week.
Right.
I didn't feel any.
I didn't feel this
but
either.
We've had something like 20 earthquakes, like in the last like 48 or 72 hours that have all been sort of like, you know, some of them have been twos, some of them have been threes, some of them were aftershocks, some of them were pre-shocks, but like.
They've been relatively large. For what we're normally getting. Like a 5.1 is, I think, the biggest that we've had since I've lived here.
Right. Well, somebody in this this article from the LA Times said that was from Fullerton or something, and they were like, it's the largest, it was the biggest jolt that I felt since 94. And 94 was when we had that the 6.7
that
was like really bad.
And it was like the one in 94 was like 90 times stronger than this one in Fullerton. That's crazy.
Well, and that's the thing that a lot of people don't know about the...
the scale, the Richter scale.
The Richter scale. It's exponential. It's not, you know, five is not one bigger than four.
No.
It's like... 10 bigger. Or
nobody knows how it works.
No, but whatever. It's exponential.
It's a lot, it's a lot bigger.
It's more than one bigger.
Yes.
Okay? It's a lot bigger. So, like, the difference between a 6.7 and a 4.1 is, like, pretty epic.
It's massive.
Yeah, it's massive.
But, well, and part of it, the way that it's measured, part of it also is determined by how long the earthquake is. So, like, some bigger earthquakes won't have, like, a huge jolt or anything. But they'll go on. Like, that one in Japan.
They call them rollers, I think, basically. Because they don't have, like, the thing that, like, wakes you up out of bed. Right. It's more that just sort of, like, it's like a continual sort of, like, shake.
That one in Japan that caused Fukushima to blow up or whatever was a huge earthquake because it went on for, like, a minute. Right. It wasn't like there was a huge jolt.
Right.
It was, like, a relatively unpleasant jolt. But it shook. Can you imagine a full minute of earthquake?
Because that one that woke us up, I think, went on for probably, like, what?
It was 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
It was a 10-second. It felt like a lifetime.
Right.
Yeah, no, that was terrifying, and it was only 10 seconds. I can't imagine doing that six more times or five more times. Like, that would have just been the end of me. So we're worried.
Big time.
Because all anyone ever talks about in LA is the big one anyway.
Yeah.
And we all reference the big one constantly.
Yeah.
Everyone's certain it's coming. Mm-hmm. There's always earthquake weather to discuss.
Oh,
that
yes.
can mean different things depending on what time of year it is. It's always earthquake weather if you ask somebody in LA.
Right, sure.
But usually when it's unseasonably warm, everyone gets nuts. And it was a few weeks ago, and so we all blamed earthquake weather for that 4.1.
Yeah.
But, like, what are we going to do when the big one comes?
Yeah.
We are not prepared.
Right. We're happy to announce that there is almost no news in the Malaysia plane search.
Here's what there is a lot of
We're not happy for the families.
No, it's terrible.
We're sad. Let's make sure that no one thinks we're being insensitive.
Right.
We're just glad that we don't have to, like, yammer on about nothing.
Here's what happened. Searches in the Indian Ocean, in the radius that they now think the plane crashed
in. We've got all these satellite images of this.
Of things in the water. In the Here's why. Turns out, it's in this sea lane that has, like, a huge amount of trash and flotsam and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they keep going and investigating things. They're doing these flyovers. The weather's terrible, so they can't see anything.
Right.
And every time they do a flyover and find something, it all turns out to be trash.
Right.
Or like a boat. Or like, it's all fishing equipment.
Right. Well, and that's you know, it was really interesting because on Real Time with Bill Maher, he was talking about this on Friday. Because when they were searching up further in the northern Indian Ocean, or even when they were still searching to the east of where the plane took off, before they even realized, they were finding a lot of sea waste, too, is what they were calling it.
Sort of.
Like, they thought that, you know, they felt like they found something or whatever, and then they get down there, and it's just sort of like, oh, no, it's just like giant pieces of garbage.
Yep.
Why
is there so much fucking garbage in all oceans, but the Indian Ocean specifically, in this situation? Like,
I don't.
Why are we
that.
Finding so much garbage?
That's bad.
That's not what
people.
We want.
That's not what
Stop
you want.
Stop putting garbage in the ocean.
No. Bill Maher said that there is a Texas-sized of just plastic in the ocean, they say. Oh, in the Pacific. That's just in the Pacific, they say.
Can we get that out of there?
Well, I don't know.
Like, what are we going to do with it, I guess? We don't
know.
Well,
I mean, soon enough, it'll be out of there because it'll just have been... You know, choking fish to death. So then it's sort of, you know, it's gone.
Because it's endangering sort of, species.
It's right.
That's what it's doing
out
there.
It's inside of a dead fish.
Yeah.
So it's sort of gone. It's quasi gone.
It's never gone because then it's just inside the dead fish. It's not like it gets digested. It just stays. The fish gets digested by the world. And then the plastic is still there.
Still there. Right. So that
never goes away.
That's not how it works, I guess. Yeah, actually. Yeah, it never goes away.
But this is specifically problematic because they keep... They're checking a sea lane right now that is quite busy. So, like, they're finding a lot of trash. They're having
trash traffic.
A lot of false alarms. So, like, at one point, like, some Australian search plane found something, like, they found something orange and everyone got really excited and they went to investigate an orange thing. Like, the best they could do was to be excited that they saw an orange thing. Like, that's not news.
No, it's not good.
And they have, now they have, on Monday, they're going to have 10 planes and 10 ships. They've had, like, I think 8 planes and 8 ships searching up until now. It's still going to be sort of crappy weather. The visibility is not great. Also, I can't say that word, it turns out. Maybe I'm getting too tired to say the word visibility.
Perhaps. You just did it.
Oh, I did it. Great.
Well, maybe if anything good comes of this, it will be learning about all the sea waste that we have.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll
learn a little bit about pollution
maybe this
in
will,
our world.
Maybe this will cause us to decide to clean up
oceans.
The oceans. It won't.
No.
But it's nice to think about.
But I'm unhappy with what's happening.
Did
I hadn't thought about sea waste until this story came to my attention.
Well, the fact that there's a term for it is sort of upsetting, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's just sea waste.
Don't dismiss that. That doesn't sound good.
No.
Land waste is bad enough.
Right.
Sea waste. We don't even live in the ocean.
No.
So we shouldn't be wasting there.
No. You know what we do, though? Eat things that live in the ocean.
Yeah. That's where a lot of our food comes from. Especially if you live in a coastal area.
A lot of delicious food.
Yeah.
Mind you.
A lot of the most delicious food out there.
Yeah.
Coming from sea waste-laden tracts of ocean.
Lanes.
It's the worst.
Waste lanes.
Oof. Also, like, if you're on a boat, definitely don't be throwing your soda bottles overboard. I'm not sure. I know that that's not where all the sea waste is coming from. Probably it's coming from landfills. It's probably, like, flowing out into the water or whatever.
Sure.
But, like, do your part, people.
Yeah, exactly.
Just do your part.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Exactly.
The three R's.
Exactly.
Let's get back to that. Oh, good.
Here's some news.
Cats.
They're the worst.
Just.
They're the absolute worst.
We often talk about how cats are trying to kill us. Cats.
Yeah, they are. You know, they're literally trying to kill me because I'm very, very allergic to them.
Right. And we have, you know, we talk a lot about our friends whose cats are trying to kill them and single white female them and scratch their eyes out and do all those things. Now they're trying to give you deadly diseases.
Yeah. Turns out now, as of recently, you can get TB from your cat.
Yeah. The first ever recorded case happened.
Cat TB. Giving a person TB.
And the cat TB, actually, I don't know if I put this here, but the cats are getting the TB. They have bovine TB.
No.
By the way.
No, no.
Yeah, I didn't put that in here, but I just. That's.
They're getting cow TB?
Yeah, they have TB.
There's cow TB being given.
TB, that sounds like.
TB being given to cats who are giving it to humans.
Well, I guess TB is very prevalent in wildlife. It's a thing that, like, a lot of wildlife is carrying, apparently.
It's funny, too, because, like, TB is one of those things that you can be around a person who has TB and not get TB. Like, at one point, my mom was a social worker, and she was exposed to a lot of people with TB. Never got TB.
Right.
But, like, it's a thing that, like, as soon as you have, like, a compromised immune system, it's, like, a really bad thing to get.
Yeah.
But, like, you can also, like, remember in Moulin Rouge, this made me a little suspect. How, what's-her-face, Nicole Kidman, is dying of TB, but then what's-his-face, the other guy, never gets it, even though they're having sex, like, all the time.
Right, and she's coughing blood
blood all over him. She, like, somehow doesn't get TB. But apparently that's a thing that can happen with TB.
Huh?
But I like to think that we've almost eradicated TB. Because it's one of those things that's fairly preventable. We get TB tests all the time. They can treat TB. It's not
Got one.
Yeah. It's not like you just die of having TB.
No.
How can we protect ourselves, though, if freaking house cats are giving it to us?
No.
Why are they coming into contact with cows? Cow TB and cats should not be in the same area.
I don't like that one bit. I also don't like that, just in general, cats are... I mean, you know what kills most cats? Feline AIDS.
Yeah.
I don't think that they... Like, when do they start passing that
to
us?
Exactly.
I don't want anything that cats are trying to give to me, disease-wise.
No. Well, and cats do make their owners crazy. Because they give owners this parasite... That makes them obsessed with their cats. That's what the cat lady thing is about.
Yeah.
There's something in their excrement that, like, makes you obsessed with cats.
It's upsetting.
That's how you become a cat lady. Your cat is giving you a parasite to make you love it more.
Oh, God.
Some real sneaky nonsense cats are up to.
Shenanigans.
Speaking of shenanigans.
In final news.
This story got passed around the internet quite widely, and no one knows whether it's real or not.
But if it's not real, there's some gems that came from it.
Right. There are some things in the story that were brought to our attention that are real.
Yes.
So basically, there was this rumor going around the internet that Kim Jong-un was requiring everyone in North Korea to get the same haircut as
him. His haircut.
Right. Every man.
The Chinese smuggler haircut.
The Chinese smuggler haircut. Yeah, apparently his haircut before he became Dear Leader was sort of associated with Chinese smugglers. So it was not a popular haircut.
No.
It turns out, however, that even if this rumor is not true, and no one knows if it is, what is true is that there are only 28 approved hairstyles in North Korea.
Yeah, and there's photos of them.
And there's four photos of them. There's 10 for men and 18 for women. Mm-hmm. They're very specific. They're very dated.
Yes. And long hair, apparently, has been discouraged by North Korean state TV since 2005 because there was a campaign that warned men that too much hair could consume vital nutrients, stunting brain development. And
the campaign
recommended they schedule haircuts every 15 days. Oh, my God. That's so often.
It's busy. It's a lot. You got a lot of time.
Your hair grows, like, probably, like, a 12th of an inch in 15 days, probably.
Yeah. Also, but I feel like people in North Korea might not have other things that they're doing.
Probably.
They might have time to do this.
Right.
Like, you're not allowed to do anything fun.
Right.
So, like, why not get your hair cut every 15
days?
Barbershops are fun.
But the way that this would be punished, and it wouldn't be, supposedly they say that
they
it wouldn't be actually...
They don't ship you to a labor camp if you have the wrong haircut.
Right. You apparently just get a talking to.
They're not animals.
But you know who gives you the talking to? The fashion enforcers. That sounds like a reality show. That sounds like a Joan Rivers
show. If there was a way for us to make the North Korean fashion enforcers a reality show, it would be the biggest hit in the world.
Yeah, it's
sadly there is no anything about North Korea would be the biggest hit in the world. That's why no one can do it. But that's comedy gold.
Big time. Yeah. Normally, the fashion enforcers are, it's a real thing, and they're student volunteers usually, and they go out a few times a year, and they, like, stand at bus stops and shopping areas and busy intersections, and they issue citations.
Right. And the citation doesn't really, like, mean anything, because it's a random student that's giving it to you, but you're just supposed to know at that point. You just...
Watch it. Watch yourself.
Well, and I feel like in North Korea, having the citation might be enough to make you paranoid, because you don't know.
Well, right. Exactly.
The state is everywhere there. Right. Everyone's always spying on
Maybe the citation does get you shipped to a liquor camp. You can't know.
You can't know. Maybe if you get enough citations, a trigger gets switched, and then suddenly you are at a labor. Or, like, maybe once you've been brought in for some other thing, they're like, well, we would have let you go, but we see this fashion citation. I don't know what you were thinking with that haircut.
Get you over the edge.
But labor camp for you. Yeah. Like, either way, if every man in North Korea decides to get Kim Jong-un's ugly haircut...
It's an odd haircut.
It's a really weird haircut.
It's like shaved around the sides, and then it sort of like flops over in the front kind of in an odd way. I mean, it's not great.
It's not one of the great haircuts. It's not one of them. And he's a weird-shaped head anyway.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't look... I would think that if I were him, with a guy with a weird-shaped head, I would request that no one get my haircut so that no one would notice that it looks better on everyone else.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, also, if you're sort of like the supreme leader who sort of is basically like this, you know, god-like character.
Wait, do you want everyone to look like you? You want to disappear into a crowd?
You should want to be the only human on Earth with that hairstyle.
Yeah, he should ban everyone in North Korea from getting his haircut.
Right. You should ban hair.
You should ban hair. You all have to shave your head. The luxury of hair...
If it's consuming vital nutrients, then why not? None of it?
Yeah, exactly. God, can you imagine how many barbershop visits people
would
have to
do? If hair is stunting brain development and they shave all of it, can you imagine what North Korea could do? And really just...
Thankfully, they're not. Thankfully, they're keeping their hair.
Yeah.
Because that could be a real debacle.
They could take over the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Universe.
Exactly. So in any case, that's final news. North Korea... never ceases to amaze.
Yeah.
Cats never cease to amaze.
Nope.
And we will be back next week, possibly with my mother,
yeah,
as a guest on the podcast, to
discuss
the things that we discuss when my mom's here.
Yeah. You know. Too bad we didn't have her here for the union story.
I know.
Well, I was just rehash it with her next
talk about
week.
It later. Yeah. she'll have some thoughts, though, about 2016,
obviously.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of thoughts are going to be here. Obamacare. We're not going to be without thoughts.
At all. she's always having them.
Yeah, exactly. So we will... talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.